Okay, hello and welcome to FGM Stories, a podcast that aims to share the experiences of FGM survivors and also share the experiences of advocates who are working daily on the field to end the menace of FGM in Nigeria and all over the world. It's good to be back again. Yeah, it's been a long while, but graciously, we're back live. That's why online. So today, I have a special guest on the podcast. She's going to be sharing her experiences as an FGM survivor and also as an advocate for the end and abandonment of FGM. She's an advocate. She works with Future Shakers Initiative and also a registered nurse and a registered midwife. A very fresh one at that. So I have with me Rhoda Okola. Hi, Rhoda. Welcome to FGM Stories.
Hi, good afternoon. Good day.
Thank you. Welcome. So let's just get straight to the point without beating about the bush. So FGM, why do you think it is a menace? Why do you think it should be stopped? Why do you think the practice is harmful? Everybody says it's a bad habit, it's a bad practice, it's not supposed to be. Do you also think the same way?
FGM is actually a no-go area because it basically does not have any medical reason for practicing, for performing it. And so far, people that perform FGM, or let me say FGM survivors, they tend to experience more harm, and there is no good at all that is attached to it. So that's why I think, or I know, it's not even about a matter of think, I know it is actually a no-go area. And also, hearing people's experiences, people that they've gone through the same bad practice, hearing their experiences also shows that this thing, there's no medical reason to it. There's no positive reason for doing it. So, yes. So, that's why I feel like it's actually a no-go area.
Okay, so for people who think that FGM is a bad practice, you know, over the years we'll get to hear that it's a cultural norm, it's a traditional stuff, it's rooted in culture and tradition. Some say it's rooted in religion, some say, okay, various reasons why it should be done and all. Do you actually think that we clamoring for an end to FGM is as a result of westernization or a result of our Western education? Because a whole lot of persons say it's because you've taken off the culture of the whites. That's why you think FGM should not be done. They're the ones who don't do FGM. They're the ones who don't mutilate their girl child or cut their girl child. So now you're taking off the practice. And do you also think that's true?
Well, what I would say to that is that I wouldn't say it's actually because of westernization.
Okay.
That is why we are advocating against the practice, yes. But the only thing I would say is that when we compare those people that used to practice this thing we are talking about, then there is, let me say, little or no education in their days.
Okay.
And currently now we are more educated. We understand that this thing does not have any medical effect, it does not have any reason for it. And we have to weigh, okay, if we are saying we want to continue practicing FGM as a result of culture, religion and all that, is it better for us to keep on practicing this? Whereas we understand the medical effect, we understand the negative effect of this thing. So that's why we realize that we can't say because of culture we should keep on practicing it. No. It does not have any benefit. It creates more harm and no good. So that's why I feel like it's actually not about westernization. It's just, I would call it, we are more educated, we understand better. And that's why we are trying as much as possible to teach people, to teach this upcoming ones, even the older generations, that FGM is not a good thing to do.
Okay, I'll throw this at you very quickly. Campaigning to end FGM, do you think it's all about feminism?
No. Campaigning to end FGM is not about feminism because, let me share from a personal experience. There was a time we went to my organization, Future Shakers Initiative, and in collaboration with some other people, we went to Okela to campaign against FGM. And beautifully, we met with a father. And we approached him and talked to him about this whole thing. And he told us that he was planning, it was on a Saturday, he told us he was planning to take his daughter to a circumciser on Monday, and we asked him why. He said that he doesn't want a daughter to be promiscuous, and I had to personally sit him down and explain to him that doing this thing does not mean your daughter will not be promiscuous, and even doing it can mean that your daughter will be promiscuous. I had to, that made me to realize that FGM is not only about feminism. No, it's cut across everybody, both male and female.
Okay, so now as you are a survivor of FGM, so yeah, to speak, are there consequences you've had to feel over the time? Do you have any personal story at the point where you found out that you were a survivor? Because personally for me, I didn't know until I was about 23, 24 that was a survivor of FGM, and it came as a shocking revelation to me. Did you also have the same feel? Did you feel the same way? Or have you always known as a child that you were a survivor of FGM?
Okay. The most interesting thing about my story is that I had always been an advocate and I never knew I was a survivor. I was just doing my thing out of passion for, you know, the human race and everybody like that. And this passion started when I knew my friends were mutilated. They told me they were. So I felt like, are you serious? This thing it shouldn't be done. And it was because they said they are still practicing it. As at then, I never knew this thing is actually still being practiced. So it was when they told me, that was when I started the whole advocacy process and campaigning against FGM. And I was just doing my thing, actually. And people always ask me that, Rhoda, the way you are passionate about this thing, are you a survivor? Like, no, I'm not. Thank God I'm not.
You never could have been better than me.
At all. My parents are educated, you know, that kind of thing. Until last year, that was 2020, and my organization, FSI, we are working towards the review of anti-FGM law in Osun State. So we were seeing the speaker of Osun State, the House of Assembly. So we were talking there. So the way he saw my passion and, you know, I was putting the whole vibe and energy and I was talking, he asked me, are you a survivor? I said, no, I'm not. I can't be, and all that. With so much pride and, you know, there are still some of us that were not caught. Exactly. So it was when I got home and I was telling my parents about it that I told my dad that the speaker asked me, and I told him I'm not, because I know I'm not. My daddy asked me, are you sure you are not? What made you think you are not? I said, what are you saying? I looked at my mom. She just smiled. I said, Mom, did you cut me? She didn't answer. My dad was like, I should finish my whole story and we'll talk about it later. So I finished. I went to meet my mom. Mom, did you cut me? You know, in my heart, something was telling me you were cut, but I wanted to get that. No, I wasn't cut. Like, no. And when I met with her, she said, yes. What could she have done? I was very little. My paternal grandmother wanted it done and all that. There was nobody she could talk to. And, you know, then this whole advocacy of 18 wasn't as in so much light as it is now. I knew, and I stood up from the chair, I went to the toilet and started crying, because I can't even, it took me a while actually before I could get over it, really. But I just realized that what I faced at that moment and what other survivors too are facing at that moment, where they knew, even though, what about those that they knew right from when they were little? What would they face? What are those things that they've been facing while growing up as a result of, you know, so much fears of what will happen to me in the future? What if I won't have sex? Wouldn't I enjoy sex with my husband? This and that, childbirth, so many things, urination, so many things like that. But, you know, at that point, I realized that, maybe because I'm a medical practitioner, it helped me a little. And because I love talking to people, I've counseled some people that are actually survivors, even though then I wasn't. So I felt like, if I'm crying like this and I'm broken down like this, what if people are coming to meet me? How will I help them? So I had to, you know, shake myself up and call people. Yes, I remember I called Laya then and spoke to her on phone immediately. And the funniest thing was that was the time we were holding our conference, virtual conference. That was the period I knew. So it was like the conference was just for me. So that's just how I knew. And the consequences of, I could say, now the consequences of FGM is dependent on the type that is done. Yes, we have four types, and the consequences is dependent on that. Now, for me, for now, the effect I have seen is the emotional effect, because I realized that there are times that before I could get over it, actually it took a long time. I won't lie about that. And there are times I will be like, okay. Now, the thing that was removed is the clitoris, for crying out loud. And medically, we understand that the clitoris is similar to the penis in male. And this is what brings about orgasm during sexual intercourse. So, the most important one that came to me is, wouldn't I enjoy this thing called sex? How will my husband feel when he knows? How will I be able to approach the world? Do I even want the people out there to know I'm a survivor? So those were the thoughts, those were the questions I was asking myself that time, and those were the challenges I faced at that time. But it took me a long time, actually, before I could get over it, because I already did.
Thank God, now you're over it. So it's a story to share with everyone, so that people also can learn from it, because I think a whole lot of us always feel like we were not cut. My mom could not have been so wicked to do that to me, neither my grandmother or anything. But then we realized I was not out of wickedness. It was out of care and love for the little baby they just had. And because it's a thing that's passed on from generation to generation, you just feel it's normal to do. But then the awareness is still ongoing, and actually that's one reason why we are here too. So now let's go to your perspectives on FGM as a registered nurse, a registered midwife, a medical practitioner. Are there experiences you've seen, probably of women trying to give birth or of women in labor, or any of such experiences where you knew that, okay, this thing is actually a terrible act, and you've seen the effect, like a very close experience of the effect of FGM during childbirth or during labors or for pregnant women or women generally? Let's look at that.
Okay. I'll quickly want to explain something here. The female genitals, the external female genitalia, is actually something that God has made to be very elastic and stretchy. So it's now, if any cut is done on that part, of course there will be scar formation. And if there's scar formation, that means the elasticity of that area is reduced. So now, depending on the type of FGM that is done, there are high chances that there will be a repercussion during childbirth. Now, to my own personal experience, actually, by the grace of God, I'm a fresh, graduate and
plenty.
A fresh registered nurse and midwife.
Choking.
I've not seen a lot, actually. I've not been opportuned to take so many deliveries. But the few ones I've had, I've seen a lot of women that are mutilated. And the particular one I can remember now to talk about is, there's actually this woman, it is not her first time of giving birth. She has been, one thing is, depending on the size of the baby someone is carrying and how stretchy the vaginal wall is, it is possible to give episiotomy. Episiotomy is medical cutting of the vaginal wall to aid the vaginal opening for the child to come out. So that's just in simple terms. Now, for someone who is giving birth for the first time, there are chances that episiotomy will be done, except the baby is small and the vaginal wall is very stretchy. Yes. Now, this particular woman, it is not her first time, it's not her second time of giving birth. And the baby is not big. The baby is very small. So it is expected that the baby should come out well. But this woman had a prolonged labor, which, it was at Adeoye Maternity Hospital anyway. So we could not, it wasn't a teaching hospital that we could really, really go for a medical test and, to detect exactly what caused the prolonged labor. But the baby was in a normal presentation, the baby was fine, the labor was okay, but the woman had a prolonged labor. And we realized that she was caught. Now, the type of mutilation, the type of FGM she had was type 2. okay. not just the clitoris. It was just the clitoris and the ears, the labia minor and part of the major too. So it was obvious. So that actually affected the elasticity of the vaginal wall. Mm. And it made we had to give episiotomy. Because when we realized, and one thing is, of course, childbirth, you would have to open everything so they would even access. And for people that are coming into the labor room, and we realize that they have been caught, they are high risk women. And we give more attention to them to be able to be sure that there will be no complications and everything, so that if there's anything, we act fast. So that's actually what happened in that situation. We realized that she was caught. She had type 2 FGM done. So we had to intervene and we had to ensure that the baby and the mother was fine. So what we did was that we had to give episiotomy again. And, you know, I think we gave double because we gave bilateral. We can give just one. We can give two. We had to give twice so that the vaginal opening would be wide enough to allow the expulsion of the baby, yes. So that's one close experience I had and is still fresh.
Oh, that feels really, really, really serious.
Yeah.
Okay, so now with your experience, we can prove that the rigors of childbirth combined with the rigors of the effect of FGM is actually very terrible. No woman should get to experience that.
Yes.
So now, what would be your advice to women generally? What would be your advice to survivors of FGM? What would be your advice to grandmothers? Because we have realized that over time, maternal grandmothers have a huge role to play in the practice of FGM. Then what would be your advice to pregnant women and women generally? Because over time, we realized that most of them don't know that they are caught.
Yes.
And at the point where they go for antenatal, they don't even tell their medical doctor or the person attending to them that we've been caught and all. So what would you give as an advice to women generally, to fathers, to grandmothers, and also to survivors of FGM?
Okay. So my advice to women generally is that they should, you know, try to know. Some people, when I discovered that I was mutilated, I was talking to some of my friends that they need to know. But some of them were like, no, there was no need. My mom can't do that in our family. We are this, we are that, and all that. And I had to just tell them, yes, I understand, but just ask. So my advice to women out there is that there's nothing wrong in knowing. You can ask. That doesn't make you a wicked child. And if you know, don't accuse your mother or the person, whosoever. Don't accuse them. It wasn't their fault. If they had better knowledge, they wouldn't have done that. So ask, know. And when you know, don't feel bad. Don't feel
incomplete,
exactly. And don't feel that even if you know and you're not caught, don't feel like you're above or you're better than those who are survivors. Yes. Let's join hands together to end FGM. And to survivors out there, just know that you're not alone. There are a lot of people out there that there are. And know that you are even lucky because there are some people that at the point of cutting them, they died and they are gone. So just know that you're not alone. And in this world, so far you are still here. You can still do greater things in this world. And to grandmothers and, you know, grandfathers and all that, my advice to you, because I would say that this thing called culture and yes, religion is kind of thick, but to our grandmothers and grandfathers out there, yes, we understand and we recognize that you have your own belief and all that. What we are trying to say is that female genital mutilation has no medical benefit. All of those reasons why we perform it and all that, to prevent promiscuity and everything, are actually not enough reason to do that. And performing FGM doesn't stop all of those things from happening, actually. So I would encourage us not to enforce this thing. We should even advocate against it. Don't push it on your daughter-in-law, don't push it on your daughter to perform FGM to her child. And to fathers, as I said earlier, female genital mutilation is not, advocating against female genital mutilation is not just a feminine thing, no. So we should all join hands. I already explained, and I'm sure that we all know the effect of this practice. So please, let's join hands. Don't force your wife to perform this thing. Don't take your daughter to a circumciser. No. If you feel like there's anything, or let me even share a story, sorry, briefly. There was a woman that I know through a friend. She said that she had, I think she had 4 daughters. So she said that those daughters, they were complaining and having itchy vagina. And because they were doing that, she took them to a circumciser and they caught the 4 children. And I was saying that the fact that your daughter was having an itchy vagina does not mean that the daughter wants to be promiscuous. No, it may be a vagina infection. It can be something else. So don't think because your daughter is kind of getting attracted to so many guys, she's becoming promiscuous. No, go for a medical test if need be. And please, let's join hands. Let's support people that are advocating against FGM, because FGM is actually a no-go area.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. It's such a pleasure to have you on this episode of FGM Stories, Rhoda. Thank you for coming through. Okay, so dear listeners, if you would like to share your stories with us on FGM Stories, you can reach out via DM on Twitter at FGM Stories, or you can send an email to fgmstoriesng@gmail.com, and our team will definitely take it up from there. I remain your host on this podcast, Oluwatosi Olaiwaju, and I'll definitely see you on the next episode. Don't worry, it's not going to take so long. Catch ya later. Anybody told you he'd be Messiah, you probably would laugh it off. I know.